The current intense disquiet in many circles over the release from prison on license of John Warboys, the black cab rapist, casts into sharp relief developments in the legal status of the parole board since that body was established in 1967. When first established, the parole board was little more than an advisory committee advising the Home Secretary on the early release of prisoners on license. The Home Secretary was not obliged to follow the advice of the board and would base his decision on whether to release a prisoner on his, that is the Home Secretary's, estimation of where the balance of the public interest lay. To be sure, the Home Secretary's decision might in principle be subject to judicial review, but a reasonable decision made in good faith would not be quashed by the then equivalent of the Administrative Court. The Home Secretary, of course, would be accountable to Parliament, not the courts, for the wisdom or otherwise of his decision whether to release a prisoner. This was classic administrative law. If the 1967 law applied in the Warboys case, the Secretary of State for Justice, who has taken the place of the Home Secretary as the minister responsible for early release, could reject the view of the parole board that Warboys was no longer a risk to the public and order that he not be released. Much of the current disquiet would presumably be stilled. But is it appropriate that the Justice Secretary might, in response to raw and fickle public opinion, determine whether a prisoner goes free? The victims of Warboys who are bringing a judicial review against the decision of the board to order his release are doubtless doing so in the hope that the understandable public concern that such a prolific offender may be set free may somehow be brought to bear on the decision-making process and that he not be released. But the relevant law has been transformed since 1967, and there's very little scope for a minister's view of the merits of a release to be taken into consideration. Today, in the typical case, once the prisoner served his tariff period, that is the period considered by the trial judge as appropriate punishment taking into account the seriousness of the offence, the board may make directions for release on licence if, satisfied that it is no longer necessary for the protection of the public, that the prisoner should be confined. The Justice Secretary is bound to follow these directions. These changes in the law reflect a strong developing judicial policy at the domestic as well as the European law, at the European level, which strongly favours imposing judicial standards of independence and impartiality upon the decisions of the parole board. In the result, the parole board has been transformed into an independent public body having the specialist task of assessing the risk that offenders pose to the public. It is not yet a fully fledged court in that it lacks the classic judicial guarantees of independence and impartiality. But the crucial point is that these developments have squeezed out any ministerial power to intervene in the public interest. It would be wrong to see these developments as a judicial power grab. To be sure, successful litigation by prisoners before the European Human Rights Court at Strasbourg has driven many of these changes. But the UK's Parliament has been responsible for much of the change, most prominently with the enactment of the Human Rights Act 1998. Reversing these changes would thus be difficult, especially if the UK remains signed up to the European Convention. Should the law nonetheless be changed to provide a mechanism, for instance a right of appeal to a minister, whereby controversial parole board decisions might be overturned at the behest of a person or body more sensitive to public disquiet? This would be difficult but not impossible. If the executive were able to articulate a vision of the public interest that goes beyond assessment of risk to the public, the accountable ministers may justifiably argue that in overriding the parole board they are adding value to the process. It remains to point out that much of what has been said about judicial review in this context is wrong or premature. It is not at all clear on the current information available that there are any grounds for judicial review of the parole board's decision to release Warboys. A sincere and intense belief that the parole board got it wrong is not enough. There may, of course, be some unrevealed egregious legal error sufficient to justify quashing the board's decision. but it cannot be too often reiterated that judicial review is not about the merits of a decision, but is about the way in which the decision is reached. One potential ground for judicial review is the failure of the board to give reasons for its decision, contrary to the strong tendency in the modern law of openness in decision-making. But Rule 25.1 of the Parole Board Rules provides that information about these proceedings under these rules, which presumably includes the reasons for their decisions, the names of persons concerned in the proceedings must not be made public. Much of the information before the board will be highly confidential, psychiatric reports or similar, and rightly not made public. But the blanket nature of Rule 25.1, prohibiting the release of any information about parole board proceedings, may prove vulnerable to challenge. This looks to me at present as the applicant's best bet. But even if the applicant's lawyers found a ground for judicial review justifying the quashing of the decision of the parole board to release war boys, their delight is likely to be short-lived. The decision will have to be taken again. It will be taken by the parole board, and it may very well be that a properly taken decision would not significantly delay the release of war boys. The real problem with the war boys case, surely, is not to do with the status and role of the parole board, important as that issue might be. War boys is believed to be a most prolific offender and to be guilty of more than 100 attacks on women. But he was convicted of only one rape, 5 sexual assaults, 1 attempted assault, 12 drugging charges. Serious as these charges are, they do not reflect the seriousness of war boys suspected of offending, and the tariff period of 8 years, perhaps appropriate for the one rape and the other serious charges, does not reflect the large number of very serious offences of which he is believed to be guilty. This discrepancy surely lies close to the heart of the victim's outrage. Whatever may emerge from the inquiries into the operation and transparency of the parole board, will not the best outcome be a second trial of war boys on a fresh indictment addressing some of those 100 attacks?